Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, welcome to Going Off Track.
Hello.
Hello.
I am Jonah, joined here by
Brad.
Steven.
And Steven.
Steven 2.
Not to be confused with Steven 1.
If you think this podcast is sounding good, it's, you know, Steven is behind the Pro Tools.
Yeah. Steven has taken the reins from me. I don't know why I'm here anymore.
I actually didn't invite Brad here. He just kind of showed up and then I was like, hey, you want a beer?
Yeah. I heard there was beer.
And if you want to work with Steven, we're over at Pulse Music in the Herald Square area. Steven Grywalski.
Like the debate about where this is, because I'm
this
uncertain.
This happens a lot. Yeah. Well, I get off the train at Herald Square, so I'm like, it's pretty close. But
I keep saying Chelsea, but it's really like Koreatown.
I don't think it's Chelsea.
Yeah, it's
I don't know.
Yeah.
If you need fidget spinners, we got them around here.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
It's for real.
So yeah, I was telling these guys, I recently went on a date and I don't know if you guys know, I have like a pretty big mustache going on. I don't know how you would describe it. How would you describe it?
Bushy.
Bushy. It's bushy.
Uncle-like.
Uncle-like.
Bushy
gets
uncle.
Gets in my mouth sometimes. Sometimes if I drool a lot, it collects.
Can I say caterpillarian?
Yeah.
I like it.
I'll take it. So I learned recently that hot wings, not the best thing to eat with it. And I was trying to eat these hot wings and I had to have a hot wing in one hand and a napkin in the other because I'd have to like keep wiping it down. Because there's no way to really eat it without like dragging it across. And it was so gross. And I didn't think about it. And I don't really eat hot wings, I guess, that often. And I haven't had this for that long. So, yeah, and eventually I just had to be like, and then it's like, dude, if you're trying to put like ranch or blue cheese in the equation, like forget about it.
Are you going dry napkin at this point or are you on the wet naps?
I'm dry, but I like where you're going.
Okay.
I think the wet nap would actually be way more effective in this kind of a situation.
Yeah, I think so.
My dad used to carry them around.
I like that.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
That was a good move.
As somebody who's raised two infants and become addicted to those fucking aloe wet naps, whatever.
Yeah, wet ones.
Yeah, whatever.
This was like
there's a box of those in our bathrooms still.
This was nascent days of the wet naps. I think there was like one brand, one type. Like you did not have the diversity.
Your dad actually had to go to Buffalo Wings restaurants to get them.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so anyone out here has got a mustache, is planning to eat hot wings. Just a heads up.
But so what? No makeout session with the nasty stash? That's what I thought this was going to go to. Like, and we made out, and she was grossed out because my mustache was
and her eyes burned after or something.
You know, that's not the kind of thing I would discuss on this podcast, Brad.
We just can't get it out of.
Brad always wants me to say all the sordid details. This is already I like hate talking about this stuff on the podcast. But when something funny happens, I feel like I have to talk about it.
Answer me this question. When's the last time you ate an ice cream cone?
You know what? That's a really good question, and it's been a really long time.
Because as the owner of a much more modest mustache...
Yeah,
I have
which
found
is looking good too, by the way.
Thank you. I found that that's incredibly difficult.
Yeah, I don't really eat ice cream ever, and if I do, it's very rare for me to have it in a cone format.
Understood.
What about you, Steven?
I had a Mr. Softy not too long ago.
Yeah.
It was delicious. I do not have a mean mustache like you guys,
though.
I could.
Do you think your wife would be cool with it?
Yeah. She doesn't care.
Steven's rocking the what I would call the Australian action actor look, which is essentially just like the extended scruffy beard and stash, which I admire. I could never do it because I'm too patchy.
Me too.
But you pull it off well.
It's pure laziness.
It's okay.
I was at a record release party. I want to plug my friend's band, Simon Doom, and Jim Carroll, who's been on the podcast from Pure Love. He's playing with him. And this guy came up to me at the party. This was two nights ago. And he's like, man, I wish I used to have a mustache like that. I wish I could have it. But, you know, like my wife, you know. And I was like, your wife is in charge of you? Like, are you saying that, like, there's, like, I understood sort of what he's saying. But I was like, this is, like, sort of insulting. Don't you think to be like, if I didn't have anyone who loved me, like, that I had to, like...
I can totally tell how alone you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how I took it. Which is maybe more me projecting.
So, I grew a mustache, like, similar to this once about 6 years ago and was at this, like, dinner party with some of, some older ladies, friends of my wife's moms, actually. And... One of the husbands came up and was like, oh, looking good. Love the stash. I used to rock one. I keep wanting to grow it back again, but I just, you know, I don't have the wherewithal to do it. And then his wife, at the same time that he was telling me this, was telling my wife, oh yeah, mustaches, they're really difficult to keep clean.
Yeah, she's right. They are difficult to keep clean. Today on the podcast... We have
somebody without a mustache,
Rachel Feinstein, really awesome comedian. I met her through Vanessa. She was in the film Trainwreck. And she does stand up. She has a super funny special on Comedy Central called Only Whores Wear Purple. It was produced by Amy Schumer. I was at the recording of it. It's not really a big deal. She was on Last Comic Standing. She's done a bunch of stuff. She tours a lot. She's really good friends with Nikki Glaser, who's been the podcast, and Amy Schumer. We've been talking about doing this forever, and it finally worked out. And Rachel tells a story that takes about, I don't know, like 45 minutes that is so amazing that you will definitely, definitely, definitely want to listen to this entire episode, right?
It could be like a TV series.
It could be. It's incredible. So I don't want to spoil it. Let's just get into it. Rachel Feinstein. I'm going off track. Rachel, you're here.
I'm
we made
here.
This happen. We've been talking about it for so long.
I know.
Welcome to Going Off Track.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were recording. Okay.
We just started recording.
We're starting.
This is
we're
real.
Like on.
This is real. This is all going to be recorded.
As soon as the door shut, we started recording. Anything else?
Put on like acting face.
Thank you.
And we met, well, I don't know how, maybe through...
Vanessa,
Vanessa, probably.
But I don't remember the first time. But
this
yeah.
This would be Vanessa Bayer?
Vanessa Bayer.
Your sister?
Yes.
And then I saw you guys again at Bonnaroo.
Oh, yeah. Bonnaroo. Yeah.
That was fun. Everybody was really drunk and people were doing Molly and stuff. And
yeah.
I wasn't. I was drunk, though. But I remember, like, Nate Borghese was there. And I didn't know that he was sober.
Okay.
And we were like waiting to go on and I was like, you should just like, let's drink, like let's have a beer. And he was like, oh, I don't really want to. And I'm like, come on, have a beer. What's going to happen? And he was like, I don't think. And I'm like, come on, have a beer with me. You know? And then he was like, okay. And then he did. And I didn't realize that he'd been sober for 2 years.
He was just waiting for that, man.
Yeah. And I was the person. I was like that bad character in like the biopic that's like, just do it. Who cares? You know,
just
like,
Just get a taste.
Yeah. I was like the evil twat in the story of his life.
Is he back on heroin now or how does that work?
I actually asked him recently. Is that he said he's been drinking ever since.
Oh, no.
But he said that he feels like... He's drinking in a fine way. He's not like lashing
That's
out.
That's just to throw it out. I mean, that's usually what functional alcoholics say. Like, they're not usually like, yo, I'm fucked up. They're usually like, yeah, shit's cool. And then you don't stress them about being alcoholics.
Right. I hear you. But he said he was planning on taking like a break for a while and said that I, you know, Just, I'm not responsible, all right? Yeah. Can I continue having this argument with myself?
You know,
in my own head, please?
I slept in that trailer one night.
Oh, you did?
That comedy trailer.
Why?
Yeah.
Why would you do
because
such a thing?
Because I was doing this job.
What's a comedy trailer at Bonnaroo?
There was a trailer. Yeah, there were two trailers, and I was doing a job for someone, and the people I was doing the job with every night were like, we're going to stay, see Pearl Jam, we're going to hang out. I was like, great. And then, like, as soon as the headline would start, they'd be like, we're leaving, and they were the only ones with a car. And so, like, I had, like, a badge for Pearl. I was like, I'm staying here, and I had to be back really early to work. Because Vanessa was performing, but I was there for work, too. And so I didn't know what to do. And Marianne was like, you can just stay in this trailer.
There was a sadness to that trailer. Yeah, did you fall into a low-grade depression?
I used a tablecloth as a blanket.
Oh. Not the first time.
Not the first time.
Was there any rider stuff like
Won't
left
be the
over
last.
There?
Yes.
Okay.
There was. Yeah,
so you got some Cheez-Its?
Yeah, there
something?
Were some snacks.
Ooh. There were some fun-loving snacks in that basket.
Remember we got locked in there because there was that like hurricane thing and they like hoarded everyone in there and like suspended the festival for like
a good
hour.
A trailer is exactly
why did I forget
where you should
about that?
Put people
I
in the event
there was a hurricane?
Of a tornado.
Yeah. There was like a warning and they were like, you have to clear the premises. And there were like, all these people went in there. And then like, Ari or someone brought all these bottles of vodka or something.
That whole festival just reeks of catastrophe.
It's foolishness.
Yes. I'm a little.
Ari's always like he's always like topless with his shirt like wrapped around his head. You know, the
Sun's
way guys.
Out, guns out.
Yeah. You know, the way like guys do like in like elementary school or like junior high school where the guys play sports and they're kind of emotionally unavailable and they have their shirts wrapped around their heads and those like boyish shirt turbans. That's how Ari looked the entire
like the Lord
festival.
Of the Flies thing. Like the Lord of the Flies look.
Yeah, you carry around a conch shell as well. That's a big middle school thing.
I was also at your Comedy Central taping.
Oh yeah, that's right. Maybe that is the night I met you actually.
I don't know. But
you and Vanessa came downstairs after for a moment,
came
right?
Downstairs. What was it? Was it Only Horrors Wear Purple?
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like?
Because no
I had never been to one before, and you guys had to keep, you know, like coming out and saying stuff. I mean, was that like a nerve wracking experience to be like, we have like, I don't know.
We had to redo certain jokes and pieces of it. So yeah, so I would say the thing, and then I'd leave, and then I'd come back out again at the end of the special, and I'd have to pretend like, you know, I was saying it for the first time, and the audience was hearing it for the first time, you know. And it is awkward, except I've done that a few times on specials, so I'm like somewhat used to the weirdness of that. But I just try to address it, mock it first, and then do it again, you know. And then Amy was also producing, so she was like kind of talking over the God mic or whatever and saying silly shit.
VOG.
Yeah. Is that what you call that mic?
Yeah,
VOG. God and Jesus.
Oh, she was in your ear the whole time?
No,
Voice
mic where
of God
they just
is
speak?
The one where the producer speaks in the control room and everybody can hear
Everyone
it.
Hears it.
That's
yeah.
VOG, yeah.
So she was like, Rachel's parents are here. And they weren't there, but she was just saying funny shit. You know?
See, that's funny. But you don't wear an IFB when you do.
No, she wasn't speaking to me.
Yes,
she was speaking to the, everyone. And then she would sort of like explain, like, Rachel has to go back out there. She doesn't want to do this. She's actively embarrassed and annoyed right now, but pretend like it's your first time hearing that, you know? I feel like TV crowds like that, like, they're good natured and they want to.
Right.
What made them have to do it? Like, what was it, like a technical fuck up on them?
I fucked up.
Oh, yeah. I don't believe
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like, I'd, like, smear a word. Like, I wouldn't say a word, right? And it's funny because, like, the second show was much better than the first show. And, like, the crowd was, were you at the second one? I don't know. But
I think I was at the second one.
So the crowd was much better. But the crowd was good for the first one. But the second one, I was like, I left and I was like, I really fucking just, I was me up there and I broke so many, you know. And then later you realize, no, you were too loose. Like, you fucked up all these things. You know, it's different than a live show, a taping. So actually, like, Louis was telling me that. He was like, you're going to leave the first show and you're going to be like, I guess I've got a special, but you're not going to be like, maybe I'm a genius. You know? And then the second show, I was like, maybe I'm remarkable. But then he's like, you'll watch it and you're going to see. The first show will be the one you use because when you're a little more controlled, you're thinking about your words and things are coming out more clearly. So the second show might have been more exciting, like live. But I was just kind of slovenly when I get too comfortable, you know. I'm just like smearing sentences and sauntering around and it's gross. It's gross.
How many times used to practice something like that, would you say?
I practice parts of it, you know, like and run parts of it for months leading up to it and write and keep rewriting parts of it and then just going on the road and and running the set a lot, you know. So at least 5 or 6 months, I guess. I mean, I was developing it during that time because I got the special, and then I was like, shit, I don't really have the special. And
do you celebrate when you get there, or do you just instantly panic? Like, what am I going to do?
I panic when I get the thing. Yeah, like I feel like Comedy Central's made a grave mistake, and and then I usually have like a fantasy that there'll be a fire or something. I have a lot of fire based fantasies. I'm like, well, I hope there's a fire, and then that's very calming to me. The idea that
like
that,
an escape fantasy,
yeah,
of some
an escape
sort.
Fantasy. Sure. Since the first time I did stand up, I want, yeah, then I imagine the place on fire, and I find that very soothing. So
you're serious? You have a lot of fire based fantasies.
I do.
Wow, what's another
Let's
one?
Let's explore that.
Yeah. What's another
well,
fire?
I mean, the first time I did
because you've already been to Bonnaroo, and they can just burn that festival to the ground.
I want fires to happen so that I don't have to do things I have to do. But then
you know
once
you can
it's
actively
that night,
make
then
that
it's
happen.
Once it's that night that I can do it. What did you say?
Is that you can actively make that happen?
I
you
could set it on
fires.
Fire, but then I would go to prison and I
you
wouldn't
pull
have as
a fire
much fun
alarm.
In my life.
No, nah, Bobcat yeah. pulled it off. He set fire to the Tonight Show. That worked out.
Did he really?
You ever seen that footage?
I've never seen
oh,
that.
Oh, Bobcat Goldthwait going on Jay Leno and setting fire to the couch.
Oh, he's so punk rock.
Oh my God, it's amazing. And then watch his stand-up special after it. And he talks about like, so here's what happens when you set fire to the fucking Tonight Show.
That's wait, awesome. What happened? Tell
no,
me.
No, Jay Leno like flipped out on him. And then, they, I mean, they literally had to
oh,
bring
he didn't
it.
Tell him he was going to
no,
set a fire?
No, he didn't tell him, no. It's
that's
amazing.
A brave man to just go rogue and start a fire.
He's,
I mean,
one, he's one of my
bravery.
Favorite stand-ups. He's, ah, God, he's so
I was I wondering, love, you're talking about, I'm sorry, like, you're talking about testing out material on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I was wondering, like, how long of a frame of reference do you need? Because every crowd is different. Basically, like, where's the, do you find out when it's, like, funny versus, like, shitty or good crowd? Because you would need, right. like, to tell it X amount of times to be able to balance out when crowds are bad or good, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of wondering, like how easy is it to gauge
it takes,
how a joke's doing?
It takes, like, at least, like, sometimes it takes, I wish I had an exact answer. Anything I said right now would be, I'd be making it up to feel like I had an answer. But it takes a little while, depending on the joke. But usually the first time you say something, it's also like, it's not just finding out if it's funny. It's like, you're not confident. So you're not selling it. The crowd senses
yeah, right,
that.
Right, right.
And so some of my favorite things bombed for a while, and not even just because I had to change and rework them, but also just because I didn't believe in them. So I would do something that I thought was good. And then I'd be like, oh, now I have to do this thing I'm scared about. And then you're
right.
full of that feeling you have when you're unsure about what you're saying. You know, it's like reading, yeah. like when somebody wants you to read something you wrote out loud and you feel like it's funny and then you feel stupid and you're like, ah, what did I ever need to say? So
right.
that happens on stage too. And then the more you say it, the more you get comfortable. So I have a hard time dealing with that time where a joke is just going to bomb for a little while and people right. are going to look at you and judge you and think you're not funny in that moment. That's hard for me. Like, I want to leave and feel like people like me, you know? I definitely care about that. So, like, I want everybody to like me. So that's hard for me to go through that weird, like, pubescent stage that a joke has to go through and just let it be weird for a while.
How does,
and
how does the
you'll get more
work?
Confident and you'll find a word or you'll find a thing,
right.
you know, and it'll get better.
So, like, I know I was reading somewhere where people, you work on an act and then you go on the road and you find out different parts of the country laugh at different things, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get to that point with the joke being like universal, like where you know it, like this is where I want the beat or the punchline to hit no matter where I am?
I think you have to run it a lot, but, and I also don't think it's entirely true. Like, there's definitely some jokes at a certain region or something mm-hmm. you're going to get, you know. And but then it's weird because crowd will surprise you. You'll get this like warm, welcoming crowd in a place you would have easily judged and dismissed. So it's tricky, you know. There's so many factors too. It's like how drunk the audiences are, and right. you know how
night of the week.
Yeah, what night of the week?
Yeah.
What's happening in the room? Who the feature was and what they talked about, and so
even so, like weather and stuff.
Yeah,
weird
like all
stuff.
Kinds of yeah. strange shit, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd like to, whenever somebody doesn't go that well, decide that the people of that state are stupid and I'm wise, but it's not, yeah, it's weird. But I think you just, so it's just doing it a lot in a lot of different environments
right.
and not bailing, you know? And so for me, I need the goal of having to do a special to write, you know? Like, I don't just sit down and write. I have somebody tells me I'm supposed to do something and then I like panic and yeah, it's
yeah.
just like fear. But I think a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm that way too.
Yeah.
I want to introduce a special segment.
Yeah.
It's
oh,
called
yeah.
Mystery Friend, and it's where
we've
got
done
a question
it a couple
from
times.
One of your friends.
Now it has a name.
Really?
It's official.
Yeah, and you
yeah.
have to answer this question, but also You have to guess who submitted it.
Oh my God.
Who your friend is.
Who your friend is.
Okay.
And this is more of, I guess, a story. It said, ask Rachel, tell the story of the guttural alcoholic you dated.
Okay, I think it's Nikki.
It's Nikki. Nikki okay. Glaser.
Nikki Glaser. I love
and
Nikki.
And she gave me different points to hit, but I'm not supposed to prompt any of them.
Okay. I'll start it, and if I don't hit them.
I'll see how many you hit.
Okay. I met this guy. I was hanging out at Stand Up New York one night with Marina Franklin. This is many years ago. Do you know who she is?
No.
She's a really funny comedian. Anyway, so we were hanging out at Stand Up New York, and she was like, there's this guy outside. He's really hot. He looks like Paul Newman. I really like Paul Newman, you know, like when he was young, you know. After he was old, I didn't care for him. But no, it's not true.
Sex with Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
I mean.
So anyway, she's like, he looks kind of like Paul Newman. So she goes outside, and she gets him, and she brings him in. And he is aggressively drunk, you know, this guy. But we just tried to keep talking to him, and he was just one of those guys that was up for anything for his night because he was a wild guttural alcoholic. So we were like asking him questions about his life, and he was drinking with us at the bar at Stand Up, and he said that he just got back from the war in Iraq. Okay, this is a very long time ago. So then I went on stage. We hung out with him for the rest of the night or something. He asked me out the next day. So we go out the next day, me and him. He goes to my show. I bombed. Doesn't really have anything to do with the story, but I'll just tell you. I bombed like a terrible bomb. Like, it was like wildly humiliating, you know? And I was like, oh, this is a disaster. This hot guy came to see me, and I had like a disastrous set, like code red bombing. Like, not, I couldn't finesse it anyway. He, I think, was too drunk to notice that or didn't understand that I bombed, you know? He's like, that was cool. You were up there, you know? And I was like, oh, okay, great, you know? So we're in business still. So we went to the bar and we hung out for a little bit. And then he says to me, there's something I have to tell you. And I was like, sure, whatever. And he goes, I was never in the war in Iraq.
Oh.
And at this point, I was like so in the date that I was like, yeah, who cares? You know, people say things, even though that's obviously a glaring red flag. And so we continued to date after this. This does not make me look good, the story, but this is the truth. So we continued to date after it. I forgave him for pretending to be from in the war in Iraq.
Did you ever at least like force him to explain this ruse?
Yeah, he explained that. Well, he said he didn't think he was going to see me again, and he thought it was a cool thing to say.
I kind of get that. I can see that.
Okay. He said that
possible PTSD. How sexy.
Yeah, he said. I mean, I think he said his biggest regret in life was that he was never in the military. And I remember we had an argument about that once, and I said that he deserved to be with someone that didn't think that was hilarious.
Well played.
He wanted to be like a fighter pilot, but he worked in construction, but he wanted to be a fighter pilot. So I was trying to encourage him. I was like, well, I tried to get him flying lessons. And he didn't want flying lessons. He played this game called Aces High, and it was like one of those like interactive flight games. And he would play it with people like all over the country, and they fly together, except they don't fly, and they engage in these battles and wars. And we would fight about this game because he would play the game, and he would refer to the battles in the game as real battles that he had. And sometimes he'd come on the road with me and he'd be like, oh great, I can see so and so from Aces High. And we would meet up with these other flight people, and then I would meet up with these guys, and they would talk like war stories, except they weren't in a war and these battles didn't occur. It's a video game that they played in their homes. But they'd be like, yeah, remember when I had your back when we had to bomb that village, man, that was rough. And sometimes they would get emotional about the battles they fought, didn't fight together, you know?
Yeah, I can't support this relationship.
Sometimes he would cancel things or say he couldn't do things because he had to fly. And sometimes he would get offended when I would even ask him to do something on a flight night because sometimes they had like races or like important battle flight on night. Mondays. And he'd be like, babe, why would you even ask me that? It's a flight night and I absolutely can't do it. He's like, my brothers need me, you know? And he really believed that he was like backing up these guys. And
I'm imagining Top Gun memorabilia, like all over the apartment.
Yeah. Did he have a name? Did he have like
his name was Tom Skerritt?
I'm trying to remember what his name was. There was like Beaker, Badger. What was his name? I know that I went on, I would play the game sometimes just like for fun. And I would talk all this shit because I like talking shit. Like, you know, like football pools. I don't really understand what I'm referring to, but I love football pools because I just like to go on and like, you know, mock everybody and talk shit. So I'd go on the game and I'd be like, you fucking losers can't fly. Like, read my wings and weep, you know? Awesome. My name was Sugar Tits. And then I would just crash immediately. Like, I just like talk a lot of shit. And I'd be like, I'll teach you boys something about flying. Why don't you wake up and smell the sky? And then I would just, and I'd immediately crash. And some of the other guys that play the game, they didn't mind it when Sugar Tits popped in and talked shit and crashed. But he didn't care for it. He said it was disrespectful.
Oh my dishonoring. God.
And there was a girl that played the game who like, she didn't like it either because it was like her and the guys, you know, and she didn't like me coming in and mocking the whole thing. And we actually had a vacation once where we went to go stay with her, and her name was like, She Gotcha, because she's always on everybody's tail, and she's got, She Gotcha. So her and this Badger, were married, and we went to go stay with them. And I remember they had flight stuff all over their house. And again, the whole weekend, they would just talk about their battles and they would get emotional. Sometimes they would hug each other and thank each other for backing them up when they had to like bomb a village or something.
No.
And then they had a screensaver on their screen. These people we were staying with on vacation. I mean, it was just in like rural Indiana. He somehow convinced me this was a vacation. It was just like staying with in these people's house that had like six Dobermen or something. And he'd be like, babe, we're going on a cruise. And then I'm like, but there's no water anywhere. I feel sad. And
was
I'm
the
in Indiana.
Meth lab on premise or was it?
It was Catty Corner. We stayed Catty Corner to the meth lab.
Okay.
And then I remember they had a screensaver on their computer and it was just like a German warplane with swastikas on the side. And I remember we had a fight. I'm like, we were like in bed that night. And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable staying in somebody's house. But they have a swastika. He's like, it's a beautiful plane, babe. It's not about the swastikas. It's a gorgeous plane.
Oh, so you got to like design your own aircraft and things of that nature.
It wasn't like Nazis they'd shot down.
No. This was the people that we were staying with, She Gotcha and Badger.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Luxurious romantic mm-hmm. vacation. Mm-hmm. Okay. They had a TV, a computer up in their kitchen, and the screensaver was a Nazi warplane, you know, with swastikas on the side.
Okay.
And it was just this rotating swastikas I was looking at while I'd have breakfast every morning. And I've obviously found that alarming.
Yes.
Maybe like, they knew you were coming.
Maybe they did. Maybe they were welcoming.
Is there anything else you want to say before? Because there's a few things you haven't hit yet.
Okay, I know what the thing Nikki's talking
There's
about.
There's a lot of stuff here.
Okay, so
I forgot we were still on the Mystery Friend segment.
So, okay, a couple of things that she likes about it is, okay, so he was, obviously, I made the decision to be with him, so the joke's really on me.
Just for context, like, A to B, like, how long are you together when you're at Badger and She Got You's house?
I was like, okay, 24, first of all. And I think we were together for like 9 months. I was renting a room and then I found out and Bleecker and McDougal, and it was like a great location. But I was living with this guy that was like really depressed, and he would take my money. He wasn't working and he'd take my money, and I found out he didn't pay rent with it. So we were going to get getting slowly evicted. He'd just pocket my money. And he was a really foolish guy. He was always in these like purple tight underwear all day long. He never went out. All he did was make collages about Bush, like anti-Bush collages. I'm like, I don't like Bush either, but he's not the reason why you're like 60 and unemployed. He was always like actively anti-Bush collaging. He's one of those guys.
No cause for decoupage.
Yeah. He was one of those guys that would like get excited about Halloween like months in advance. He'd get real revved up about what he was going to wear for Ween that year, you know? And then he would go as like Cheney and his, you know, and then it was like one not time he went as like the seven deadly sins, and it was like Bush, Cheney, and his henchmen. He had some extravagant costume, and I'm like, get a job. This has nothing to do with Cheney, nothing. And so then we got evicted eventually, of course. And I found out, and then of course the war guy was like, come move in with me. You know, Iraq was like, come on over. So I was like, yeah, why not? So I moved in with him, and of course he was, you know, a wild alcoholic. And we got in a lot of fights because one of the things she might have mentioned was a big fight we had was when we would go out places, you know, he was actually by day seeming a really reasonable person. You know, alcoholics like this. He seemed cool. He didn't say dumb shit. And he was like fun and kind and like kind of impressive. He was like a form. He was like a real dude. At night, he was like a flailing moron. And I brought him to this Comedy Central party and I was like, do me a favor, just like, don't get too drunk. And don't call people chief, because he'd get drunk and he would start calling guys chief. Yeah,
that's on the list.
And he would hit them really hard in the back. You know that free hit men give each other when they first meet each other? Like, hey, let's go on there, chief. But you're like, you just wanted to hit me. You know what I mean?
That means I don't talk to them.
Yeah, I fucking hate that hit.
It means we got nothing.
It really bothers me when that
happens. Exactly. And I know when I watch men meet each other that talk to each other like that, it makes me so glad I'm not a man. And I have to deal with all, you know, whatever, my own separate set of nonsense as well. But I'm always like, I'm glad that I never have to deal with that weird energy between men like that meeting normal men. And they're like, that's a good cheat. And it was very hostile.
You might as well, like, they literally might as well just, like, bash their dicks together.
Yeah.
In some sort of weird primal fashion, just to get it out of the way. It's essentially what's happening.
Yeah, they must be mushing dicks.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's aggressive, too. Like, you know, it's very
aggressive. It wouldn't be like a sexual dick mashing. It would be like a
like a sword dick fight.
Like a Brokeback Mountain sword, in the tent, like, kind of situation. Like, it's angry.
They're hate fucking each other.
They're hate fucking to show dominance. Like, who's the dominant one?
And it's, like, awful. I'm just like, oh, my God. I'm glad that's not going to happen to
me. Some guys use handshakes for that, where they're like, like, a firm handshake, I'm a big believer in. I was even raised by a woman who said firm handshakes, look in the eye, is very important to her. But some men do the, like, firm handshake where, like,
just lashing
I'm going to, like, press really hard to just show you something. I'm showing you something
some
right now.
Some people can't help it, though. You ever, when you're in your travels, met Slash?
I haven't shook his hand. Okay. I was just in a catering line with him once.
That worked.
I was very excited. But
he, just not to digress, fierce. I interviewed him a long time ago, and he shook my hand, and he's fucking Slash, and it sincerely hurt. And I know, and it was like, hi, how are you? And
you know how many fucking solos that hand's ripped, dude?
That's what I'm saying. Boo! So then the next time I'd interview him again, I was visibly nervous about the hello because I didn't want to get my hand, like, torqued again. But
you do have soft hands.
My hands are soft. I really haven't worked a day in my life. soft hands.
Have you ever, like, looked into, like, a Ponds commercial or something?
Oh, my God.
That?
I am Palm Olive. I'm constantly soaking
you're
in
like Duchovny and a Zoolander.
Yeah. Not playing around. Back to you, because this has to keep going.
This is amazing.
No, it's interesting. So from a guy's perspective, what they
feel. We were on
chief.
Like,
so I had before we went to this party, I was like, no chiefing tonight. And I think that's a reasonable request.
Don't get too drunk and no chiefing at my work party.
Babe,
that's fair.
Seems fair.
No chiefing. I'm on it. I hear you, babe. No chiefing.
Oh, my God.
Of course, we get to the party. He just went rogue and started chiefing everyone in sight. Just got loose. I just saw him, like, smacking backs in small, like, slow motion. I was just watching it, just, like, horrified, you know? And they're, like, people that I work with and, like, you know, like, it was awful. He was chiefing everyone. And then, so we left. But he was the kind of drunk that he would start swaying and kind of glaring at a certain hour, you know? Like, you know that drunk where
that, like, vacuous, like,
he glares at people. And, like, sometimes it'd be the most confusing people. Like, we'd be, like, at, like, a family bat mitzvah, and I'd just catch him having, like, a face-off with my elderly aunt. I'm like, I don't really think she's the issue in your life. But he just like, starts swaying and glaring at people, you know? And then I have to get him to leave. So he was glaring at people at the Comedy Central party, chiefing, glaring. It was a disaster. And so I tried to get him home. And then finally, like, we went home and he claimed that he hadn't been drinking, you know, like, always. He was like, babe, I had, like, a sip of a, you know. And he was on that never-ending, like, it's shots, you know what I mean? It's like, no, you're a guttural alcoholic. I remember one time I just came home. He swore he hadn't had a drop of alcohol. He was just on the edge of the bed, nothing on at all. Except for he had, like, a button-down, like, Magnum P.I., like, Hawaiian top on. This is, like, 3 a.m. Balls, dick, and just a Hawaiian button-down Hawaiian shirt. It was buttoned all the way to the top, and he was just like, hey, baby! And I was like, you're drunk. He's like, I'm not drunk. This is what you do. You want to create a problem? We'll give you a problem, because there is one, and I'm not drunk.
Oh, my God.
He's like, aloha! You know? And the thing with me is, it's like, it is funny, so it's hard to get mad.
Yeah,
it's
what
funny.
Drunk Tommy Bahama fantasy was going on in his head?
I have no idea. Bloodshot, just like,
it's like, when did you drop that clue? If that was something you were into.
All right, well, we hit Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, Hawaiian shirt.
Hawaiian shirt was on there. Okay. Chiefing people was on there. Flight team was on there.
Uh-huh.
Funeral and meetups.
Oh, okay. So, on the game, okay. When somebody,
there's more, by the way, too.
The flight game.
In the flight game.
Okay.
When somebody dies in real life when the person that's playing the game in real life happens to pass away because some of the people are older and he's played this game for years. When they pass away, they have a funeral where they fly to their favorite spots and they like just blast, I don't know, whatever, fucking music. And they go and they kind of go over their favorite battles. A lot of Jimmy Buffett and stuff like that. Okay. And they just kind of like Buffett through the best moments and kind of Buffett through the best battles. And, you know, and I remember it was like around the time Obama was elected. And I was like, we should go out tonight. Like, it's kind of exciting night in the city. And he's like, babe, I have to attend a funeral this evening. And I was like, well, you don't. And he's like, babe, like, we're going to go over some, this is like going to be very emotional for me. We're going to say, he's like, basically he was just like, I don't want to kill some of those people. I didn't want them to have to die. You know, he was like, it's painful. And so he was like, how about some support is what he was arguing. Uh-huh. Like, how dare you ask me to go out tonight?
Wait, hold on. Are they, the characters died?
Or no, the person dies in real life, which, okay, fine. That's a sad situation.
Yes.
You don't know these people. I mean, they live far away, but go maybe fly and go to the funeral, but you know they do the funeral online.
Oh, I see.
Within the game, and they buffet okay. through their favorite spots.
So they're flying in the game, yeah. and you can play what songs.
They go over their best battles, like what they feel the guy's highlights were as a soldier.
It's like an online Shiva.
He wasn't a soldier.
Kind of.
Were you friends with Amy at this point? Because I feel like she would relentlessly make fun of you.
No. Okay. I wasn't friends with Amy or Nikki. I was just like, I was still like nannying during the day. And
you were working through some stuff.
I got to be honest, there's a part of me that hears about something like this and goes, you know what? It sounds like these people have a community, and it sounds like they need it.
Yeah. They do.
Like, yeah. It sounds like Badger and some of these people would probably, like, maybe they, like, would have started murdering people if it wasn't for their weird...
I believe he might have killed. Yeah.
So they get it out in there. They're like, I'm blowing up a village with my friends.
I do think it's absolutely an outlet for their aggression. I don't think it's really the game itself. It's all, it's the fact that he was, destroyed our relationship. It was the fact that he was a deep, deep alcoholic and that we had nothing in common.
But something had to, like, make you go, oh, this guy for a little while.
Well, again, like, okay, so
Paul Newman.
You're young.
Paul Newman,
I was
man.
Young. I was attracted to him. But also, I think that, you know, that beginning stage when you first date somebody and it's awkward and it's weird and everybody's like, you know, like one guy is kind of supposed to, there's this expectation they're supposed to sort of court the woman. But then if he doesn't court enough, you don't know if he, you know, all that weirdness was removed sort of because, and I hate that, but that beginning phase can be weird, you know, and I hate the anxiety around it. And so I think that that was removed because he made this big, he told me he was in the war in Iraq.
Oh.
So by the second date, his whole goal was just like to prove to me that he was a good man. And you know what I mean? So he was like courting me in this like wild over the top way to like show me that he deserved a second chance because it was a Iraqi lie, you know? And so it was all just kind of entertaining. You know, I was bored. And then there's this hot guy that just shows up all the time. He always had like flowers. He was always doing very dramatic things for me. And, you know,
I'd imagine like, you'd want to get out of your apartment too.
Yeah, I wanted to get out. I wanted to get away from the collager. And it was like, you know, in like Streetcar Named Desire, where like Marlon Brando's like always like sorry and in the rain and stuff. That's how it felt to me. It was just like this hot guy that was always sorry.
Before
like,
the
sure,
rain.
All right,
in the
fine.
Movie.
Before, yeah, or during. Yeah. I don't know. It's a good question.
There's
Blanche.
There's,
yeah,
there's two things we need to hit on. Two more. One is the limp.
Oh my God. Yeah. Sorry. He also faked a limp the first night that we met. Because the limp was from a war injury. Oh, I also forgot.
Oh my God.
Another thing.
See, now I'm worried about you in the first stages of meeting somebody.
No, but you have to understand, I was 24. I was 24.
Yeah, but I've been 24.
He's like bordering on that white woman who was like running the NAACP in Washington
or whatever.
I just
saw a new story about her today. She was, like,
Rachel Dolezal.
She was on.
Because this is beyond like, oh, I'm just fucking with this girl. This is some like deep-seated shit. He thinks he's like a pilot.
Vice did a piece on her yesterday. She just wrote a memoir.
Of course she did.
She changed her name, but she wrote the memoir under her old name.
Oh, right.
Because she can choose whatever she wants.
Yes. So he faked a war injury.
To limp. Yes.
Okay.
Did the war injury actually happen in the game, though?
Yeah, was it from just sitting
legit?
Too long?
It's a really good point. No, there was no injury because the second date he told me, like, you notice that I'm not walking with a limp tonight. And that's because
I'm would have been impressive if he, like, Kaiser Soze'd it and he told you in, like, a year.
To be able to go through the limp and the war injury, like...
Well, you have to understand also, like, a lot of it's timing. So the second... And, okay, first of all, obviously many red flags, and there's something very wrong inside me that I allowed any of this. And I'm aware. I'm not arguing that point.
You should be proud of this, by the way.
This is an incredible story.
Yeah, this is amazing. Isn't like, I don't want you to take this as like, yo, she shouldn't have stayed with this guy. I'm like,
it's fascinating.
Only that, like, respect to you for like finding this guy like odd and interesting enough and sticking with this almost seems like for like to see what the fuck is gonna happen
next.
I feel like
a lot of times you can analyze why you've made a decision or whatever in a relationship, but sometimes it's just like loneliness and convenience. Sure. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm sure we all got some champs under our belt.
So
what do you mean?
What are you talking about?
And also the second date or the first date that, you know, we met on the street, and then the second date is like, or first, whatever, he came to the show and I bombed really bad. So at that moment, what I wanted was just like, oh my God, I hope this guy is still attracted to me after I bombed. So I think I didn't really fully process what he was saying because I was just so relieved that he still liked me after my wild bombing.
Wild bombing. You saw the game play.
Yeah, you're right. So
the last thing on Nikki's list, I don't know what this means, but it's bus suspicions.
Wait, what is it?
Bus suspicions.
Yes. Okay, there's two things. Okay, so first of all, I forgot to say, so when he was drunk, another thing that he did on one of the first times we went out, lie that he apologized for, is like, so we were really drunk in this bar, and he was like, and we were having fun and like making out, and not like, we weren't fighting or anything, it was fine, it was new. And he goes, babe, I gotta get out of here, I gotta catch a red eye. And I was like, why? Oh, you didn't tell me I had a red eye to catch. He goes, I just got to get out of here. I can't get into it, but I have a red eye to catch. And I was like, well, but where are you going? Where's the red eye going? He's like, I want to tell you more, but I can't. All I can say is that I have to catch a red eye. And I was like, okay. And then he didn't leave and continued to order more drinks and shots and never caught any red eye. And I didn't really remember because I was a little drunk too until the next morning. And I woke up and I'm like, I thought you had a red eye to catch. And he was like, oh yeah, I made that up. And I was like, why? And he goes, I guess I just figured like important men have red eyes to catch. He's like, yeah, and I guess I just felt like, you know, like a real man has to go get a red eye. Again, I think part of it was that was so funny to me that I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's hard to be the person that's angry. It's just so preposterous. I couldn't channel any other feeling but just that it was,
because if it was done tongue in cheek, he'd be a genius.
Yeah, and he tried the red eye thing a second time. We were drinking again. He's like, babe, I got a red eye. I was like, oh, not so fast. Not gonna fall for the red eye trick yet again.
Oh.
So man. I caught him on the second red eye. But the suspicious bus thing is, so he lives in West New York, and it's like you have to take this weird tunnel. Do you know where that is? And you have to take that, and you have to get on this little dumb bus, and it's on 42nd and 8th. And it sucks, because if you're out drinking and hanging, you know that eventually the bus is going to be part of your night, and you have to stand on the, you know, and by that stupid, like, just really, it's just like the sidewalk near Port Authority, and you have to get on this bus. So we go on the bus, but the problem was, sometimes he would get suspicious of the bus itself. So you know how he would glare at people and get suspiciously glare? He was such a drunk that he would do it with vehicles. So sometimes it was like real hard for me to get him in a cab or on a bus, because he'd be looking at the bus like, yeah, not so fast. And I'm like, it's a vehicle. You don't have beef with the bus. We need the bus to go. The bus is our friend.
Chassis is compromised or like...
What's
like,
that?
Like something in the car is compromised?
Did Christine fuck him up as a child? Or
Wait. No, he think... I couldn't possibly answer any of these questions. He just looks at the bus suspiciously and he's like, nah, it's not going to happen. Sorry. You know, like a guy that's trying to get one over on him, and he's kind of puts his foot down like a real man, says, sorry, not going to fall for this scam yet again. And I'm like, it's not a scam. We need it. We need it so badly right now. Just please step on the bus. We had fights because they would come like every 50 minutes, and I just have to stand there with him and his infuriating alcoholism, just so that I could get home and be in bed, you know? But sometimes he just would let the bus pass, you know? And he'd be like, sorry, babe, doing it.
What was his job? Like,
he was a foreman on a construction, so he did like construction stuff.
Not surprised.
And again, if you met him by day, but you know, drunks, like alcoholics like this, he's cool.
Jekyll and Hyde.
He got a kick out of what I did. Yeah. He was like warm. guys liked him because he's kind of like a man's man or whatever. But
a little slap on the back?
Yeah, a little slap on the back. But he wouldn't be aggressive like that either. Yeah. That aggression would come out only when he was drinking, you know? So it was just like, and, you know, I think like, I thought I could figure this all out like a maze and give him some good advice and he would adjust a few things and stop chafing and we'd, you know, I don't know.
Sounds like a man who is in a very like macho kind of world, but never felt like macho enough inside of that world and had all these things to compensate for.
Yeah.
So he goes to the Comedy Central party. He's like, there are a bunch of writers. I'm a foreman. I'm going to chief everyone.
Everyone in sight. He's just going to chief through that party. Yeah. He just goes streak chiefing. I agree.
I want to thank Nikki so much for sending me this email.
That was a great mystery friend. Wow.
Really amazing.
And that's our time, everyone.
is it, how do you feel about, like, obviously as a comedian, like, you can draw on these experiences and, you know, use them as humor. I mean, how do people ever get offended, like, if you're talking about them? Or is that hard, or do you feel like you can't really filter it that way?
No, it is hard sometimes, and I feel guilty. Even as I was telling the story, I thought to myself, I should have changed She Gotcha's name as if she's going to hear this podcast. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and I do sometimes feel bad. Because, like, so when I broke up with him, it was basically, you know, he wouldn't stop drinking. And then I left and moved out. And he always checked in afterwards and was very sweet. And you know, he was a kind person, just a, you know, flailing alcoholic. So I do feel guilty. I do feel guilty when I talk about people. But it's also like, I mean, when I do date somebody, I try to explain, like, you know, that's part of it. But there was this one guy that I lived with and his mom was like ridiculous. And I did this like chunk about his mom. And then whenever I do it, he'd be like, I'm going to leave when you do that. And then he would take this like walk. And I felt really guilty about his like solo man walk he would take, you know, like, and I'm like, well, I'm such a bitch, you know, I'm forcing him to have to take some sad private walk because I'm exposing something in his life. You know, and I'm like, maybe I'm an asshole. I don't know.
What was the bit?
Well, his mom was, he was a really sweet guy, but his mom was in prison for a long time. Okay. And when we started dating, she got out of prison and his brother was like a well-known boxer in New York. And they did a story about them on the news. And on the news, they did this news story about how, despite the fact that the mom went to prison for dealing drugs, this boxer boxed his way through it. And they like show the whole family, including my boyfriend at the time. And every time I went, and then they showed her in prison and he like confronted her about her drug dealing and stuff. And every time I went to the family's house around Christmas, they'd play this video because they were more like proud. The mom be like, let's play the video, everybody, television, you know, like, and she was more proud of being on TV than she was like embarrassed for being incarcerated, you know? And,
right.
And so, which was hilarious. And she was a great time. I loved her, but she was a lot of fun. And I thought that was hysterical that they didn't see that this might not be the video you want to like share with everybody that stops in, you know, around Christmas time of him confronting his mom and like being gone for the 10 year important crucial years of his childhood. So he'd be like, oh, let's play it, everybody. Fox News 5, Evening News, you know, and then we would all sit around and like, yeah. And I told that story. And I honestly think his mom would have thought it was funny.
Yeah.
She was a good time when she got out of prison. We had no problems, me and her. We were thick as thieves, but he was embarrassed by the whole situation. And I feel horrible. Yeah, maybe I'm an asshole. Like, well, I can't defend it, really.
Do you feel like you, as a comedian, like, I feel sometimes I watch this roast stuff and it's, like, so brutal. I mean, do you feel like you have a pretty thick skin as far as, like, having other comedians fuck with you? Because I feel it seems like you kind of have, like, Vanessa, I feel like SNL, you don't really have that as much as you do, like, it seems like in, like, the stand-up world.
No, certain things I'm sensitive about, you know, but I mean, definitely I've been fucked with by those guys for so many years that I'm used to it to a certain extent, you know? So like when I first got in the Comedy Cellar, like four comics went and I was doing my audition set. They would go downstairs and just like fold their arms and stand around the room and shake their heads while I was on because they thought it was funny, you know, like just shaking their heads at me like, ugh, you know? And that was hard to like perform at this new place you're scared of when they're around, like just basically just making like a thumbs down, you know, sign and shaking their heads. And they'd mock everything I did. And sometimes I would come in an outfit and I'd be like, take a little risk or something. And they would just destroy it. There's this comic, Keith Robinson, who's one of my best friends, and he's hilarious. But like I came in one night and he's like, why does Rachel dress like she shops at Suburban Outfitters? And that was very hurtful. I still think about that when I get dressed. And then I wore like tights and low boots, which I thought was like a safe choice. A lot of women wear that style. And he's like, hey, Robin Hood men in tights. And it got a big bellowing laugh at the table. And that I was like, oh God, like they just know how to make me feel dumb in what I'm wearing, you know, or anything. Like they would just trash. One time he brought me on and he said, Rachel dresses like a district attorney. Because I wear a lot of like jeans and blazers. I'm like, fuck, I do. I dress like a district attorney. I'm like a non-court
These are
day.
People that usually don't look like they own a mirror. Like I watch a lot of stand-up. You know
Meanwhile,
what I mean?
Like he wears like Nigerian blouses that he buys like some dumb overpriced shirt shop in Philly. You know?
The kind of people that go, Daishiki's a good look.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean?
Oh, he's a terrible dresser. Yeah.
Is there a lot of hazing in that world? Like when people are first coming up? Like,
oh yeah. They'd be brutal. Another thing they do is they find a person that looks like you, but like the worst version of you.
Oh.
So we'd be walking and we would walk by somebody outside and they'll be like, hey, Rachel, Rachel. And they all start screaming. And I like look around instinctively and then I'll see some woman that's your worst fear of who you can end up. I remember one time it was just this old woman like who was like had a lot of, she was like playing with some trash outside and she was like poking at it and she had, you know, like a lot of like, she had a lot of bags and she was separating the trash. Like she was crazy. She had a lot of control issues around the trash. Just like poking different carts for the trash and yelling at people. And I was like, fuck, I do look like her. Oh my God, what if I end up as an old woman with control issues around a heap of corner trash? So yeah, they'll do stuff that's brutal. Or they'd call me over to the table like they wanted to say something to me. And this is so juvenile. But then you lean in and you like open up your body language. And then nobody says anything. Just turns around and doesn't look at you.
So, yeah, I totally mean, back that. That's a good one.
It's pretty funny.
Damn,
it is funny. And then another thing they'll do to each other, all these guys, is they call each other on the phone. And they'll do it. And like I'll be in the car with like Keith and he'll call, you know, Bill Burr or whoever. Mm. And they get the guy to start talking. And they're nice and they warm and they act like they're reasonable people calling their friends for a few minutes. And they ask a few questions like, hey, Billy, how was your special? And then as soon as Billy's like, you know, I kind of enjoyed. Like, shut up. And they hang up. And sometimes they just quietly hang up, but they try to find the perfect hang up moment and they'll argue about what is the best moment to hang up. Like when you really get a you know, like, and they've done it to me before. So, like, ask me about something I'm doing in my work or something. They're like, what do you think is the difference between, like, playing a little theater or playing a large? And then I'm like, you know, like, I guess for me, like, as an artist, you know, and then, of course, they hang up immediately, you know?
That actually kind of, like, leads into the question I was wondering, which is, like, you know, I always see these specials of comedians when they're sitting around and stuff and they're just constantly talking shit. Like, it seems like they're just, like, breaking each other's balls constantly. That's something I'm familiar with. I'm from New Jersey. Everybody talks shit. You just knock each other down at every chance. That's the fun. I can't understand how and when that becomes, like, actually constructing jokes and telling them on stage. Like, how do you go from A to B when you're, like, a kid just, like, having fun with other kids and you realize you're funny and you make people laugh, but you're kind of just, like, shit talking and going about, and then how do you like actually construct jokes and like perform them?
Like I still feel kind of like a fraud in that way because I don't write like quick jokes and monologue jokes, and like, you know, sometimes I'll see certain comedians and I'm like, that's what a comedian, you know, like, because I don't write like a quick joke punchline,
right?
And I'm not like I can't just run off a bunch of jokes about any subject matter, you know. I know a little bit like how to write about something, funny comments about something, because I've had to do that for shows and stuff, but I'm not really like a traditional joke writer, but I tell stories usually about my life and then I find little punchlines or things in them. So usually my material comes from just like experiences I've had. And I guess when I was growing up, I like also imitate people. So I'd imitate people in my life and entertain my friends that way. But it was also a defense, like most comics, you know, it's not an unusual story, but like, you know, I'd got like wildly bad grades, you know, and just like, and then I would talk shit and have fun, mock things. You know, but yeah, I probably would have mocked things even if I wasn't getting bad grades. It's fun to mock things, you know.
When we did a podcast with Nikki a couple years ago,
and
she had said she usually will like bring like a mail opener with her just because it can be sort of like creepy sometimes to be by yourself.
Yeah.
Is that because that's an interesting person? Because I never really, guy, I never really thought about that, I guess.
Definitely.
She spoke a lot about like learning from Amy Schumer about how to like deal with like, get what you're owed, get this, don't get bulldozed, that kind of stuff. It was pretty...
Amy, Nikki, and I will exchange texts on the road all the time, and that's, like, my lifeline is the conversations and texts, and they know the place you are. You know, like, just this last weekend, you know, like, I'm at this club, and this is going on. Like, plenty of times, Amy will give me a heads up about someplace. You know, like, I was playing at this place in Florida where I had to stay at this condo, and it's, like, in a bad neighborhood. And she's like, make sure they, like, you know, change the code on the condo because they just have one code and everybody knows that code. And somebody just can break it or come in there at any time, you know? Shit.
Can you give a quick explanation of the comedy condo? A lot of people don't, if people don't know it.
It's like a room where you know that other comedians have been. And it's inherently foul. So that feeling you have when you get to a hotel and that just that relief, it's the opposite feeling.
And does the club own it? Is that how it works?
The club owns it because they're too cheap to just get, you know, some hotels. Mm-hmm. And then you have to stay there. And it's really, it's like actively disgusting. So a lot of times I would just sleep on top of the bed, you know, and you know, it's... I mean, it is scary. There's lots of times that I realize, like, oh my God, like, that was crazy. Like, I was at this hotel in Vegas, and I got to the hotel, and I went to, I had been flying cross country, and I was tired, and the key wouldn't work, you know, in my tower. And they sent a mechanic up and to help me. And I was just, there was no other room, so he just had to fix the thing on my door for the key. And I was sitting talking to him, and he was, like, asking me questions about, like, being on the road and, like, what's it like? And I'm like, it's hard sometimes and whatever. But he seemed like a really, like, lovely guy. So I was just chatting with him for a while. And we had kind of a nice, warm exchange, not flirtatious, but, you know. And then he leaves. I go into my room at this hotel in Vegas, this casino in Vegas, Harrah's. And then in the middle of the night, the next night, my boyfriend at the time flew in the next day and he was in bed with me. The mechanic walked into my room at 4 a.m. and just, he came in my room. Okay. So, I mean, he was coming in my room to assault me. Like, why else would he walk into my room? He knew I was alone. He asked me about my life and I told him I was going to be alone. And he came into my room and we both jumped up in bed. And then my boyfriend at the time, like, argued with him or whatever. And then the guy kind of ran down the hallway. And then we called downstairs and complained. And I asked to speak with the security guy. And the security guy said, well, he says that he got a call to your room. I'm like, I never called the room. And even if I did call the room, you don't walk inside at 4 a.m. I was fast asleep, you know? But I remember that whole weekend, I was trying to get people to understand. And they're like, well, it was a mistake, Rachel. Like, stop trying to make a big story. And I'm like, it's not a mistake.
No. You were not the first.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And I feel like I needed to try to make a big deal so that this doesn't happen to another woman.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, completely.
And I forgot to lock that top thing. So now I never forget to lock that thing anymore, ever.
Or go
ever.
Armed. Jesus
but,
Christ.
But they didn't take it seriously at the club.
Yeah.
You know, and nowhere. I tried to tell people all weekend. And this last weekend, I was at this place and they were actually really nice there. But it was just like, it was one of those areas where you're like, oh, like I wouldn't feel safe here, you know, if I was alone. And. You know, it's hard.
Yeah, I think people forget that comedians have to, like, tour.
Yeah, and a lot of times the club will announce on their website, we put our comedians up at this hotel. And the guys are like, great, if I want to get laid, the girl, just like the puss will just be delivered to my door.
For, like,
and I'm like, hello, I can't have people know where I'm staying. That's terrifying. Crazy. It's chilling. And I had a guy come up and just lurk around my hotel because they did that, you know? And so I saw him outside my door in the middle of the night, you know? And I end up going to a girlfriend's house in the middle of the night. But I've had a lot of weird, unsafe situations like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
I stand-up is like, you know, no respect to the touring punk bands we have here with us, but like the hardest job, like in entertainment, I think, because you're by yourself usually, you know, and you're up there. The performance itself is just you. You know, usually I think it's a really hard gig, and then the traveling by yourself and that is just even more. At least in a band, you got like you got your dudes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Usually, dudes who've been in a few scrapes. You know.
But in bands, you like the nice thing about stand up is like I don't have to rely on anybody. I mean, you have to rely on like four animals. Hope that they have reasonable behavior, or, like show up on time, and then you have to. Like,
yeah.
So I don't envy that with bands and moving things.
Yeah. I
you have to like move stuff after it's done. I just get to go home and lay down.
Job case.
Well, I think the reason you see like every single person who was in a band, oh, they're going and doing their solo thing is because it's like, this is a lot fucking easier. Like you just making decisions for yourself, staying where you want to go, breaking things up how you want to. And it's trying to, I mean, the diplomacy between five people is usually just what breaks all bands up anyway. So in that way, it's easier. But I did wonder, I have toured with a couple women and I always felt bad in some ways because it's sort of like this badge of honor with dudes. Like you show up to a venue, like a punk venue, like, I haven't showered in like 5 days, bro. Check it out. It's almost like this, like you're wearing the same jeans for 2 weeks and they're just like growing film on it. It's almost this badge of honor. And then like the women I was touring with, like they feel held to a different standard because like they want to look a certain way and present themselves a certain way, but aren't given the opportunity because of the shitty places we're at. The quickness by like you have to go from place to place. Like, do you ever feel that? Like,
yeah,
you could
stressful.
See like
it's
some
stressful.
Dude in fucking sweatpants getting laughs and nobody's looking twice, but like you probably couldn't walk up there in sweatpants. You'd get judged.
Yeah. I mean, now like the places I'm staying aren't as chilling as they were in the right, beginning. Right. So you like can take a shower and like, like this last weekend when I was in Sacramento, I had to do like morning TV shows. So I was like, is there a makeup artist or something if I'm going to be on TV? You know, so I can ask for things like that.
Right.
And, but you're definitely like judged differently, you know, like guys under my, like, if you look at anything of mine on YouTube, it's just like somebody's either discussing for any girl, like whether they're hot or whether they're not and why they're not, you know, and it's not that same dissecting of how you look. That never ends, you know, for sure. I mean, yeah. I don't see that under the guys' videos, you know, at least I don't think so. But no. There's some guy named Mr. Twat Waffles that writes under my videos all the
Twat
time.
Twat Waffles? Oh,
yeah. It's his name. Yeah,
what a classy pseudonym.
Does he leave very insightful comments?
No, he's very angry at me. He usually lashes out.
Oh, man.
Sometimes he'll just be like man voice or something. Like he'll just say something where I'm like, that's a new insecurity. I didn't realize I had a man voice. You know, like.
You got to not read the comments, Rachel.
You got to turn them off, dude.
Especially someone named Twat Waffles.
Yeah. It's either like shockingly sexual, like not even flattering. We're like, oh, dear God. Like, why would you even want to do that to anyone, much less me?
I'm not even.
Just like, you're fat, you know? Like.
Yeah. What's it really mean, Twat Waffles?
I don't know what Mr. Yeah. Twat Waffles means.
I don't think it's a literal name.
No, it's not a literal name.
Sounds like a yeast infection. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, do you have anything coming up that you want to promote?
Yeah, spin away from Twat Waffles and promote.
Before we wrap up,
pivot.
Anything.
When is this coming out?
Whenever you want.
I mean, I'm in Philadelphia this weekend at the Philly Punchline.
Okay.
So Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Okay, I'll probably come out after that.
Okay.
But
and then I'm at the Draft House next month in D.C.
Okay.
And then
We can read.
But you could just go to my website. And,
yeah, we can read the dates in our intro too.
Yeah, we could. You can go to my website, and then if you want to get my special, that would be nice.
Yes. How do you get that?
You could get it on Amazon or on the Comedy Central app, and it's called Only Whores Wear Purple.
And I've seen it. I've seen it live, and it was amazing.
Thank you.
And really, my wife totally agreed with the title.
Really?
Yeah. She's like, I fucking hate purple.
This lady that used to take care of me when I was a kid told me that only whores wear purple. She also said, she had a lot of strange rules, that only whores carry suitcases. There were a lot of very specific whore-based rules.
So being a whore was bad?
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Yeah, she was saying, like, don't wear purple.
Otherwise, she
got
a very specific...
Only whores.
She went to a very specific brothel.
Yeah, or a specific brothel. You know, Joe DeRosa told me once
don't go to Lilac Baggage Claim. Don't go to
he said his dad told him that... No, his mom's father told her that only whores travel, which I thought was one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
Told him that on a train.
DeRosa, he's really funny.
Yeah.
He said that, she was told when she was young that only whores travel. You take a trip, sorry, you're a godless whore.
All right. That was Rachel Feinstein. I'm going off track. Thanks so much to Rachel for coming by. Please check out her Comedy Central special, Only Whores Wear Purple, came out last year. It's so funny, and look for her doing stand-up near you at somewhere.
And go check out Trainwreck, because that's a hilarious movie.
Yes, and go check out Trainwreck featuring my sister.
Who's awesome in it.
She's great in it. Amy Schumer, Bill Hader. Pretty good cast.
Doesn't matter. Just watch it.
Doesn't matter. Watch it. If you want to do a podcast or do some voiceover work, you can always check out this Pulse Music.
It's a nice place. You could record a band here.
Yeah. You could record a band here. You could do what else?
All your recording.
All kinds of stuff. So check it out. Pulse Music in New York. If you like Korean food, it's very close proximity to a lot of really good Korean food.
True that.
Yeah. So
and Herald Square.
And Herald Square. If you want to go to Macy's, pick up a scarf.
Which we all do.
Which we all do.
Fucking elevators.
Yes.
Jesus.
And if you want to support this podcast, you can Venmo us at Off Track. That account is linked to Brad's personal account.
Yes. If my name does not pop up, you're in the wrong spot.
Yes. And
it's two F's.
Two F's. OFFTRACK.
Exactly.
And if you don't want to donate, that's cool. You can support us just by subscribing, tweeting at us, telling people about the podcast, getting our numbers up so we can podcast full time. Wouldn't that be the dream?
9 to 5.
Nine
baby.
To five every day.
Podcast.
Bringing people in and out. No time to do anything else. But yeah, thanks Rich for coming by. Thanks to Pulse Music. Thanks everyone for supporting the podcast. And we'll be back with another episode next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.